Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, blah, blah, blah. Long story, you know the drill. Quick question. Today's discussion is about...
Helmut, have we ever started like that, blah, blah, blah?
When we were talking yesterday that we are going to be here talking about, we're going to have a heritage discussion based on the heritage again discussion that took place in Kenya last week. Now I was like, oh come on, for the first time it's, you know, something, you know, we're going to talk about something that's at least that, you know, something that is the most remote to something positive when it comes to, you know, when it comes to most of the topics that we have here.
Yeah,
until I got to the point of who sponsored the whole event financially.
Not UNESCO.
France and Japan.
Yeah, I saw that on one of the posters. Okay, dear listeners, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, and good day, good afternoon, welcome to your drive time session. Yes, we had the bloody blah, blah, blah in there.
Uh-huh.
But don't worry, the salad, you know, the salad that we were busy tossing up there in that
blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah session. It's not other particular salad tossings, please guys. Don't let your minds wander. Was obviously because we are rounding out some of the particular African discussions that we've had since Tuesday up until now. Mm-hmm. I do have a lot of energy in me. Please do not ask why, as to why Dwight sounds so exciting or enthusiastic on this Thursday. Well, we also paid for the enthusiasm component. Hint, hint. But this is a particular discussion that's known as the International Conference on, let me just get that thing's name. The International Conference on Cultural Heritage, but it looks at Africa's on the authenticity of African cultural heritage.
Yeah.
So, getting back to your discussion, Helmut, about the one of the protocol observed that
speakers.
That's why I say protocol observed. Because it's one of the speeches that we can't use for today's session, because all the guy is saying, thank you for coming here. Please look out for this. Please look out for that. Please do this. Please do that. Please look here. Please remember to stay here for the buffet. And remember, the coffee is wonderful. Was literally one of the particular sort of like African speakers. And that's literally what that was in his speech. The Kenyan minister that was there, she then took things off like, remember to enjoy Kenya, stay for the sights and the sounds, but we're here for key intellectual discussions. And the two Africans that are speaking both sides of the UNESCO person are literally saying nothing.
There's one guy, Professor Peter Ngure, the ambassador and permanent delegate of Kenya to UNESCO, did point out a few things about the discussion of heritage.
In a way that
I found intriguing. First of all, when you look at the UNESCO heritage sites globally, you only have a very few of them on the African continent. Namibia, on the other hand, has two. One is what they call the Sand Sea. They could have just said Namib Desert, but they decided to call it the Sand Sea. That's on the World Heritage website. Africa is, Africa is always referred to. And Africa is always referred to as one of the most diverse continents on the planet.
Yeah.
We're diverse, by skin tone, by language, by culture, by religion. We are diverse.
By animals, by biodiversity.
By biodiversity.
Even by deserts.
By height. Can't believe I had to point that out.
No, but that is true because many people in Namibia, actually, if you ask them, do they know about the pygmies? Do you know about the pygmies?
Yeah.
The pygmies.
Yeah.
If you ask any Namibian, do they know about the pygmies? A lot of Namibians don't know that we've got these literally height-challenged people. They are not dokolosis, please.
No, they are literally that high.
They are. And it's not dwarfism. It's not a disease. It's not the ailment. You know, the genetic ailment.
Yes, genetic, obviously.
Theirs is genetically like this.
Yeah, but it's not genetic in a negative way. Yeah. As in it has to do with some kind of sickness or something.
Yeah. So any Namibian out there, or specifically our listeners listening out there, go challenge yourself, guys. Go look up the pygmies, specifically that do live in the Congo Basin, or the Zaire Basin is the other name it has. And yeah, just read up about them specifically, because they are also one of those particular marginalized communities on the continent. But then obviously I had to, you know, just to reference, Omulemba has always pointed out when I've done marginalized discussions here on Eagle FM, he's pointed out Dwight, someone that does not have access to economic particular services should also be, or has not access to opportunities in the economy as well, should also be considered marginalized. He's correct. But obviously it seems that we have to work with the term marginalization in the context that we obviously have to describe our discussions in.
Mm-hmm.
Because Helmut, I know it's slightly different, but I also came from earlier today from another particular discussion where there is a particular ongoing grassroots level engagement regarding, but I think we will have to position this for something sometime later. In our planning, but just to
sometimes later today or sometimes later, as in topical arrangement.
Topical arrangement, okay. But it feeds into this discussion as well, because this discussion we're taking it on a macro level, continent level.
Yeah,
the Namibian one, this is based upon languages, specifically the indigenous languages found in Namibia.
Yeah, there's a part where they talked about there's an organization known as ICOMOS, the International Council on Monuments and Sites.
Yeah.
One gentleman from Zimbabwe pointed out that when it came to the recognition of the Matopo Hills, because this is an area that's a mass of granite hills basically found in Zimbabwe, and they have parts of that hilly place. Some of the granite have some of the oldest rock paintings.
Yeah.
When it came to the recognition of that place as one of the UNESCO World Heritage Site, scientists or experts coming out of this ICOMOS, International Council of Monument and Sites, they did not want to recognize, to this day actually, they have not recognized the spiritual value behind the, that the natives believe into the, believe that also fits into the whole painting thing.
Mm.
So they just recognized agreed to recognize the rock painting part of it. Now.
But did they say why?
One point the guy made was one that I'm still trying to find like what he was trying to say, and that is because there are not a lot of African scientists. African scientist in that organization. And I think now comes in, because I think he pointed that out because science is looking at it's not delving into someone's spiritual belief.
Not actually, Hamu. Mm-hmm. The spiritual belief side does exist, ne?
Mm-hmm.
Which is one side of things, but then you would be arguing on the aspects, for example, like mainstream religion and these smaller religions discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I can answer that even for you.
Mm-hmm.
You specifically also don't need a PhD. You just need to sit there thinking about where does Christianity come? If you ask yourself that question, where does Christianity come from on the continent?
Mm-hmm.
Where does Islam come from on the continent?
Yeah.
If you follow the pathway in terms of how Islam, traced into North Africa, into the Sahel, and into down, what's this, eastern coast of Africa.
Yeah.
You also realize other particular economic factors that negated, that had a negative impact on African communities, specifically through, how this religion traveled. That was also one of the reasons why I believe it's not really a good thing to, what's the language name? Swahili.
Mm-hmm.
To try and adopt Swahili, because Swahili was brought along with a religion. The same with English and with French.
So it's in itself some sort of pidgin.
It is a type of pidgin, but it's a go-between language.
Yeah.
Not even Afrikaans is on that level because it is proven that specifically the Portuguese had, before the Dutch and the Germans and the other Europeans decided to circumvent around South Africa.
Yeah.
The Portuguese, if you go look at, for example, the earliest explorations, if you look at the Bom Jesus, the discussion I had here on my Sunday morning take about the Bom Jesus that was discovered in Oranjemund in 2008.
The what now?
The Bom Jesus. So, Helmut.
Why does that sound like Bom Jesus?
It's good Jesus. Translation from Portuguese.
Oh, it means
good. Bomb. You say bomb, like, but bomb without the B. Not bomb, the boom, explosive bomb.
Yeah, Nagasaki, Hiroshima.
Yeah, bomb, Portuguese bomb, meaning good.
Good, yeah.
So, the Bom Jesus, was shipwrecked on, now imagine this, Helmut. For a ship to be shipwrecked on the Namibian coast, it actually implies that you are beached. Now, beached and stranded, the particular terms used in maritime trade or maritime movement is usually a negative. Because to be beached as a ship, not as a boat, as a ship, is one of two things. Either you miscalculated the depth of
the shore.
No, not the shore. The, what's the thing? The depth of the sea.
Uh-huh.
The seabed. You miscalculated how deep the waters are.
You thought it was deep. It turns out it's not that deep.
Yeah. And it's not that deep. And one of the things that many people will not tell you about Namibia's shoreline, specifically Namibia, is that Namibia's shoreline is a receding means moving back. It's a growing shoreline. Go next time, if you go to Swakopmund.
Huh?
Go to Swakopmund. Go to Henties Bay and look at where people are parked. Look at how far the town is from literally where you find the seawater splashing onto the beach.
Yeah.
Go look at those two distances. And then you come tell me, Helmut, if you don't see that in specific parts of the coastline, Namibia's shoreline is actually growing.
Also, is that one of the reasons why you find some of the ships seems to be like, you know, it's like someone lifting them out of the water and throwing them in the desert?
Go to the Skeleton Coast specifically.
Yeah.
Between Swakop and Henties Bay. Go look at those shipwrecks.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, how do you see the sea over there?
And the shipwreck.
And the shipwreck is over here.
That thing is just on land.
It's purely on land. And in most cases, sometimes it doesn't even get covered by high tide. It doesn't even get covered by high tide. Now remember, our Skeleton Coast is most also considered part of these
heritage
sites across the world. Now ask yourself this next particular question, Helmut. What happened to the Bom Jesus? Now the Bom Jesus was discovered in 2008 by Namdeb miners. These were guys on the ground that were busy excavating and clearing some sand, you know, some portions of land, you know, in terms of their day-to-day activities.
Yeah.
The Bom Jesus was actually back then a crown vessel, meaning it was a government vessel of the Portuguese monarchy. Now, under international maritime law, a government vessel is supposed to be given back to the government that owned the vessel. Mm-hmm. But the Portuguese, and this is on the Portuguese embassy's website as well, in Windhoek, they actually donated the whole thing with its gold to Namibia. Now, when I said gold, for any of you listening who have any particular criminality plans running in your head, this is a national treasure, technically.
Literally.
This is a national treasure. This is, let me say that again, it's tantamount to what happened to the people in Kitmansoop, who supposedly, according to police investigations, received some of the lost shiny stones from the Namdia heist. Let me just tell you again, if you are having Reservoir Dogs moments with Val Kilmer, Kevin Spacey-like ideas, I'm warning you now, don't do that.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It's not even Indiana Jones level, Helmut. I'm talking about Reservoir Dogs, you know, or bank heist, movies and the likes of that.
Mm-hmm.
If people are having ideas like that, because we are starting to see people who are having movie ideas, trying to implement them in real life, and then it leads to a lot of loss of life. I know we went pretty depressing right there, but just to let you know, guys, don't think about it, because these are literally, you actually can't. I even tried calling the archaeologists that work with this.
Yeah,
they don't want to answer. There are phone numbers, but they don't want to answer. I dropped a WhatsApp. Zero. They don't want to answer. And obviously, as we do know, the Speergebied is still active. Because if you thought that the bomb Jesus is in Oranjemund, it's not in Oranjemund. It's literally there. And under controlled conditions, it can only be accessed. The thing is supposed to be excavated.
Yeah.
With its particular cargo hold, whatever it had in its cargo
hold. Time have buried it in sand.
Yeah, but you need to, if you need to, for the thing to be displayed as a monument, it needs to be excavated under conditions, and you need to place it in special, particular like a special built warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about something that can contain a Boeing. One of the largest Boeings.
Okay.
Because you need to put that, you can't leave it in the sand there, Helmut. The whole ship needs to be excavated like that.
What the heck are you using to lift that thing up?
No, well, if you watch enough documentaries about how they excavate pretty large things. I mean, they excavate, sometimes they leave ships that are too badly damaged just there in the sea.
Yeah.
Like that part of Pearl Harbor where the specific ships that were bombed by the Japanese.
Yeah.
You can literally see the ship on the seabed in the harbor.
Yeah.
From the sky. If anyone takes a sky photo.
Yeah.
But you can see that on the internet as well. You literally see that ship lying there. It was two or three ships that sank there.
Yeah.
They leave it there. So
the soldiers stuck in some of those ships. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, but the other thing is also that some of the ships that featured at the Battle of Pearl Harbor are anchored there as well. So the whole harbor technically then, or that section of the harbor, then operates as a monument for the UN, for the United States.
Yeah.
So it's a U.S. monument. So, everyday tourists can come to the site, access it, get onto one of the ships, take photos, do their stuff and stuff like that, and then they go from there. Now that is a cultural dynamic. That is commercially viable in terms of the, in video games, like you would also know, they call it the lore. So folklore or lore is usually the context, the story, the story behind what you're seeing here. And this particular discussion about the bomb Jesus forms part of the overall maritime exploration that the Portuguese were basically conducting.
Yep.
Now, factor that particular discussion. I know I went in a long-winded, you know, particular.
No, it has gold in it. Someone out there is drawing a roadmap on
a scenario right. About, you know, the explorate the interactions between ancient African communities and European explorers was that it has been proven that the belief before Diogo Sao. If you don't know who Diogo Sao is.
Oh, social studies. It was hard to miss.
Diogo Sao was the guy that put up the Cape Cross.
Mm-hmm.
The cross that the colonial German administration took off and they shipped and then they took it to Germany most. Because they didn't want to reveal, you know, that the Portuguese were here first before them.
Mm-hmm.
But what can you do? The Portuguese were here. That's why you've got that one spot known as Angra Pequena.
Mm-hmm.
The Portuguese names associated to certain sections of Namibia's coastline. Going on with history, obviously, the aspects, if you look at, like, the language Swahili itself.
Yeah.
Swahili itself has a particular cultural impact, has cultural richness associated in it, but the East African guys want to champion its use in the AU circles of things, but it was a go-between language that was, you know, that had connotations of the Islamic religion associated to it because that's how Islam spread in certain parts of Africa.
Hang on a second. A few months ago, I decided to take up Swahili.
Okay.
Yeah. For the internet, some, you know, there, thanks to technology, there are a lot of apps. And I was quick to learn that, okay, the word, at least the words that keep popping up as a word that, as a Swahili word that translates to peace is salama. Salama.
Don't let Abdul call in here, because Abdul will call in here, and if I tell to him salam alaikum, his response would be alaikum
salam. Exactly, that's where I was going. So because I've heard this, you know, I've heard this coming out of the most of the Arab countries. Yeah. Salam alaikum,
the greeting.
Which is,
yeah,
it's a greeting. So now I'm just going through my regular Swahili lessons, and I come across, you know, pieces of
Arabic.
As in, yeah. Peace, salama. Okay.
Or pieces of Arabic in the language.
Yeah, in the language. Which I think, now, if you look at it, before I start sounding like some of those Canadians that, they conducted, a survey. I think it was an online where they asked a lot of, I'm not sure if, I think that was either Canada or the US.
Mm.
They were, someone carried out a survey to ask people what they thought about implementing Arab, Arab numbers in the American numbering system. And a lot of people were like, no, we don't want Arabic number here. And everyone told them,
you're already using their methods of calculation, even algebra.
some guy came in and wrote a comment that, you know what, I hate, at least, thank you for exposing me to this information because I know which schools not, okay, I know which schools not to send my kids to. Because,
which are all the schools?
All the schools in North America. Look, it's very simple. Islam had its glory days. That means it had a lot of influence that you see as being associated with Christianity today.
Mm.
That means they had a lot of influence in philosophy, mathematics, religion, you name it.
Mm.
So it's not unheard of to find a lot of, Arabic words, especially in mathematics.
But
the relationship between that and Swahili, I was like,
but
I didn't know that.
No, but here's the other relationship factor also, like, for example, in the subject matter of mathematics.
Yeah.
What many people also forget, because remember, the Arabs had the influence on the Romans. They didn't have it on the medieval Europeans.
Mm-mm.
It was on the Romans, because the Romans had a fundamental issue with basics like addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. You know, the basic actions of trying to calculate things in their numbering system.
The Roman numerals. That's kind of difficult to do algebra.
Because what product do you get to if you use their Roman numerals?
Just a bunch of CMX and a bunch of letters.
And that's why people can't count the American Football League, the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
It has most that in the Roman numerals in it. Do you know how many times I've been confused?
What's that?
By looking at that counting mechanism. And all it does is it just counts per year.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl.
Ad break.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge. As we invest in time on our network enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage. For the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always
Paratus. Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Welcome back. The time is 5 o'clock on the dot, it's a minute past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today we are in the discussion of the International Conference on Cultural Heritage in Africa that took place last week in Nairobi, Kenya.
Yeah.
And that it was themed a dialogue on the concept of authenticity.
Yeah. But the authenticity thing, Helmut, mm-hmm. I have a little bit, I understand it in terms of the word authenticity. Mm-hmm. I know you also understand it.
Yeah.
Because authenticity, is just another term for the other word, genuine.
Yeah.
Being genuine to yourself. Not being original, because original, you would be in the explainer or in the explanation of what is fake or what is unreal mm-hmm. and what is real. And then we would be in the scope of AI, basically, because that's naturally where we'd migrate to if we use the word original mm-hmm. and what is unreal. But when it comes to authenticity, Hamoud, and this is specifically why this discussion is strategic for us today. The authenticity of things is if you have to look at what you and I today, what every other Namibian is also exposed on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So what do you see on media? So media includes reading a newspaper or magazine, reading a book, reading a storybook, going to school. So the education system as well. The kind of language medium that, or language of instruction as the, if an Angobwana knows that particular term, they call it the, how you conduct, and you also know it, the language of instruction that you conduct in education even.
Yeah.
The kinds of textbooks you access. The kinds of entertainment you access, the kinds of, or in what format is the religion also conducted in. Here's one of the key concerns here, Helmut. That's also why I highlighted that there's a slight issue with the Swahili situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same issue with specifically, English and French. There are some African countries, if you look at the French-speaking countries,
yeah.
some of them have a split between Islam. One side is Islam, one side is
Christian.
Is Christianity. Yeah. But the Nigeria Christianity, is one of those countries. The Christianity is a large Catholic presence.
Yeah.
Cameroon is one. And Cameroon even gets divided even further, predominantly French-speaking and Northern English speaking. And remember, Cameroon was supposedly one of the German colonial possessions in Africa. We get into another country. Take this next particular look as well. You get to, what's the country's name that also has that Christian Central African Republic that suffered its civil war before COVID?
Yeah.
Remember, that's the first instance we ever heard of the Wagner military coup from Russia. Central African Republic was suffering a civil war based on religion. The eastern side was, which is your right-hand side, the eastern side was Islamic of the country.
Mm-hmm.
The other half, western half of the, which is your left-hand side, mm-hmm. our left-hand side in the studio, was predominantly Christian. But what kind of Christian? You find African Catholic Christian. Because it's a French-speaking country.
And France is predominantly Christian.
And France is Europe's largest Catholic country. So, when you venture into these demographics, Helmut, you realize the conflict zones immediately. You go through level of conflict zone in terms of identifying and understanding why certain things probably look so dysfunctional. You get into the English side of things, for example. The English obviously also brought their own particular religion with, but the English were more of an extraction-based discussion, meaning we want your resources pure and simple.
Yeah, we're not interested in
We're not here to bring religion and the good faith and show you a book and give you stories from 5,000 years ago about some guy that was swallowed by a whale and then miraculously not digested by any digestion juices.
Oh, no, that's not the most miraculous part.
And then spat out.
The most miraculous part is after that.
He didn't break a collarbone even.
Still not a miracle. The most miraculous part is he went home and gave that as an excuse to his wife over why he went missing and she believed it. Yeah, I know where that's going to work. But look.
But you know that there is a plausible theory. Yeah. The theory still has to be proven about the size of animals back then.
Yeah.
The size of animals during the period of the first of the Old Testament.
Yeah, you gave me. Actually, I started looking it up after you told me that the ancestors of the animals who have domesticated the ones that we call cow.
Yeah,
the ancestors were massive.
Yeah. Now imagine prehistoric humans that technically were smaller than us, Helmut. They weren't larger than us. They were smaller than us.
Really?
Yeah, Helmut. You are technically larger. There is an ancestor somewhere that, you know, going back, obviously, a couple of 200,000 years, mm-hmm. that was a short person. But what has also been discovered, and, you know, just loosely remembering the particular citations, is that there's a big discussion between whether various kinds of where does the true Homo sapien come from? Because there's a debate that East Africa, Kenya specifically, supposedly, and or Ethiopia is that the cradle of life discussion for us humans.
Yeah.
But the South Africans could prove with Lucy. It's Miss Lucy, and then the other hominid or humanid. Well, not humanid, not hom. I should not
humanoid.
I cannot use that word.
What?
Because it does not say that was an ancestor of human, of us Homo sapiens. Yeah. But it was one of the particular ancestors that was discovered.
So in other words, COVID. So in other words, there were different species of what you'd classify as human beings.
But that is the thing, Hamut, because if you work on the commonality that we can all transfer blood to each other, that was also the first debunking that took place during COVID when a whole bunch of Africans were saying, yeah, it's just COVID is just a European disease.
Oh, dear Lord.
And then you ask them, how is it just a European? No, the DNA, that side is different.
All of a sudden, we won't catch it.
Then you had the whole of Madagascar running around with the president of Madagascar's holy juice that he was there perpetuating the president, Magufuli from Tanzania, that died. Yeah. The late Magufuli,
yeah.
Who died
with a heart complication.
During COVID, heart complications, Helmut?
Mm-hmm.
Really? That's the explanation we're going with? During COVID? And he was importing that holy juice from Madagascar.
From Madagascar.
Yeah. And then they were trying to also concoct their own particular manufacturing process of whatever is there in Madagascar.
So that how I really don't like how the whole thing became more of a profit race.
And profiteering was the ugliest thing.
It was the ugliest thing. That's where you had a lot of even the quote unquote established pharmaceutical guys that were just rolling out stuff without first verifying that without first understanding it's. More like its negative side effect, which again you can partly understand because you really didn't have 10 years to test the whole thing like you do with the time frame that's required to test if the product when it comes to medicine to understand what its pros and cons basically.
But what you and I are literally just speaking about
was
a discussion also about culture and heritage and the authenticity of the thing.
One thing that was also said in this whole, was emphasized every now and then was, especially at the beginning was that, the whole conference is about, Africans basically, asking ourselves one question. Who are we?
Yeah.
First of all,
it's an identity question.
Yeah, it's an identity question. There is something that we are spiritually, call it religiously, culturally, culinary or more like music wise, arts wise or entertainment wise. There's something that our ancestors did to keep themselves busy when they were bored. That's where throwing entertainment. That's why we have a lot of games.
Yeah.
So all these things, the younger generation seems to be losing touch with that, with that part of our history, with that part of our heritage. So the goal is, how do we, first of all, revive the knowledge of our identity? Revive the knowledge of our identity and then, preserve it in a way that, the next 10, 15, or, you know, the next generations don't lose it too.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at it, one thing, in the 1970s, NASA launched the, the Voyagers 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And, one thing that the Voyagers contained, these are basically, you know, spaceships, literally. And,
was it the explorers that they sent into space?
These are the Voyagers. These are just unmanned machines that they just sent
into
space.
Probes, yeah, the probes.
The probes.
Yeah.
They sent into space. Last time I checked on that was last year, and they said, the signal of Voyager 2 was now becoming weak because it's like really, really far.
Yeah.
Because, I mean,
it can't relay a signal anymore.
It can't relay a signal anymore because
it wasn't the same with Voyager 1.
There are two Voyagers that were launched. And on the Voyagers, on both Voyagers, they have like one of those, vinyl recording systems.
Mm.
And with it's more like gold plated, gold plated vinyl type of, type of recording systems, which is supposedly, if there's intelligent life out there, they will, play the whole thing and say, you know what, there are people there, let's go and check on them. That's what Neil deGrasse Tyson said, that, you know what, I don't understand us. We can't give each other, emails and residential address numbers, but we are willing to trust a whole different type of species. We don't know whether they are hostile or not.
Yeah.
With a return address of planet Earth.
But do you know what's the worst part, Almut? That deGrasse Tyson in that discussion also highlighted.
Yeah.
I think I partially watched. Is the one where he does the co-hosting frequently asked questions discussion with the other actor, the guy that was an actor?
What is it?
Neil deGrasse Tyson has got certain particular social media platforms, but there's one he does with an actor. And the actor asks the question, and he answers
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it with that one? Where he highlighted that particular, because I saw that response once.
I'm not sure if he was, but it was also one of those questions and answers, questions and answer thing. He was answering a question. Because one of the questions he was asked was, what's your take on us, sending all this, information about planet Earth deep into space for other aliens to find for quote unquote intelligent life? That's when he says, okay, you know what? I think he believed that there was a positive side to that, but in that response, he's just saying that, you know what, I believed in that, I used to be pro that, but now, thinking about it in just local terms, just planet Earth and our human-to-human interaction type of relationship terms, I don't think it's a good idea, because here at home, you're not going to walk around giving everyone your phone number or email address.
Yeah, and just tell them,
give me a call. Yeah, give me a call.
And then you've got
This is where I live.
And then you've got like a 12-year-old, sort of like prank calling you the whole time during odd hours of the day.
Yeah.
Have you ever experienced prank calls, Helmut?
No.
By a little kid?
No.
And then they just breathe, like it's a horror movie, they just breathe.
Yeah.
On the phone.
That's the
part. And you go like, hello? And they don't respond. You go like, hello? And then they just, the old.
That's creepy.
No, it is. Luckily, that's someone else's intellectual property. That was a stand-up comedian highlighting the prank calls discussion. But I know that has happened before. Not prank call, ad break.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
Olio mnangeshefa nohara kushivifa oma akuro yo kupitira mohorike radio station yo Eagle FM enya mukuru olongaha ningekwata fano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kon rahita tuimwe heri imwe Neheri, Ime Ime, Nohamano. That is 0817147116. Momberewa, Konora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Vatatu, Ne Nola No Natu. Nenge, Dumo Emaila, Ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo Mone, Oshijemo, Shiri, Nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. 16 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Now, before we continue, let's take a live read.
This is a Velvicia University live read where everyone is an achiever. For online qualifications, postgraduate programs, the June 2025 intake applications are now open. Velvicia University is inviting applications into the below-mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wuu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Occupational Health and Safety. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Higher Education, this is a level 8 qualification. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a 1 year blended course. Master of Higher Education, to enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. Should we play that before we continue?
Well, we can. We can. Just to highlight the listeners, we're going to play a short particular audio from Louise Huxhausen, who is the regional director for UNESCO Eastern Africa. And she particularly motivates the particular discussion regarding the authenticity dimension from the African context. We'll take a quick listen on this.
This timely gathering, co-organized by UNESCO, the government of the Republic of Kenya, and the African World Heritage Fund, stands as a critical milestone in our shared commitment to contribute to the reframing and enrichment of global heritage discourse with African perspectives. Africa is home to an unparalleled diversity of cultural and natural heritage, shaped by millennia of human ingenuity, resilience, and creativity. Despite this richness, the continent remains significantly underrepresented on the World Heritage List, accounting for just over 12% of inscribed properties, and faces the sobering reality of hosting the largest number of sites inscribed on the list of World Heritage in danger. This reality compels us to critically examine the conceptual foundations of global heritage frameworks, particularly the concepts of authenticity and integrity as defined under the 1972 World Heritage Convention, with a view to better understanding the diversity of values, cultural systems, and expression that defines Africa's heritage landscape. Deserve for dialogue, a meaningful opportunity to reflect more deeply on how heritage is understood and valued, especially from an African perspective. Over the next few days, our goals are clear and purposeful. Firstly, we want to interrogate and expand the conceptual boundaries of authenticity and integrity in ways that are inclusive of African oral traditions, dynamic social practices, and indigenous systems of knowledge transmission. We want to advocate for policy coherence at national and regional levels with the aim of embedding these enriched interpretations into heritage laws, guidelines, and nomination processes. We want to build technical awareness through interdisciplinary knowledge exchange between heritage professionals, academics, and community custodians. And finally and crucially, we want to engage communities as beneficiaries and agents of heritage safeguarding whose lived experience and traditional stewardship are essential to the resilience and relevance of heritage today. This initiative is closely aligned with UNESCO's global priority Africa and the African Union's Agenda 2063, which both call for the integration of culture and heritage as catalyst for sustainable development, peace building, and Pan-African identity. Excellences, ladies and gentlemen, I wish to express our heartfelt appreciation to the government of the Republic of Kenya for graciously hosting us here in Nairobi, for its steadfast commitment to heritage conservation, and for championing this essential dialogue. Many thanks to you. Allow me also to extend our gratitude to the government of Japan and the government of France, whose generous financial support has made this conference possible. Their long-standing partnership with UNESCO in the culture sector, particularly in advancing capacity building and innovation for heritage in Africa, remains deeply valued and appreciated. As we embark on this important journey together, let us be guided by humility, intellectual openness, and a shared vision to shape a more inclusive and representative heritage discourse that celebrates Africa in all its richness and diversity.
Welcome back, dear listeners. That's the voice of Louis Hawks. What?
Hawkshausen.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, there's a T there somewhere, guys.
Yeah, Hawkshausen.
It threw us off.
So the regional director of UNESCO Eastern Africa Division and pointing out the most painful part that I found in that whole, you know, conference, if you can call it that. And that is the part of, where she points out who are the, you know, the financial powers behind newsflash. Not us. It's about preserving our culture. But now we just decided, you know, someone else will find it.
And this is some of the particular things I'm with.
That are painful. Okay.
Very painful.
Okay. Let me get you a few. Yes. According to the UNESCO's own website, on this whole conference, International Conference on Cultural Heritage in Africa, a dialogue on the concept of authenticity. And you just skip all that whole thing because my most important part is, yeah, right here. The International Conference on Cultural Heritage in Africa, a dialogue on the concept of authenticity, is to clarify, is to clarify heritage, authenticity, integrity, conservation, theory, and practice at all level of the continent and contribute to the identification. Now, this is the most important part. To contribute to identification, documentation, protection, valorization, and promotion of humanity's heritage within and beyond the African continent.
Yeah.
The identification and documentation. Let's just stick to identification, documentation, and protection. Because first of all, you have to identify what falls under the, you know, heritage preservation, you know, discussion. And then you have to document it.
And then you've got to maintain and protect and preserve it.
Yeah, for the future. Yeah. That's where you have to protect and preserve it for the next generation to come and, you know, keep learning about all these things. But when it comes to these things, I think it's one of those very interesting discussion. If you look at it from the angle of the pyramids of Giza, the pyramids of Giza dates back to, at least that's what historians believe, they date back to the 4th century BC.
Mm.
Now, if they are dating back to the 4th century BC, well, here's the thing. The pyramids of Giza has a lot of mathematics measurement that goes to show both the diameter and both the radius and the circumference of the planet. Its circumference means circular, means it's round in shape. Now, here's the thing. It wasn't until the Greeks. Okay, first it was the Greeks that started debating that the Earth is round. And if you look at it, you know, bro, it did not end well for homeboy Galileo when he came up with that idea.
Yeah, he didn't end, it didn't end well with him.
Because, yeah, it didn't end well with him. For a very
there was a bunch of people that...
In church.
In a church yeah. that told him, no, the earth is flat.
You can't say that it's round. You'll be going against the...
And then you literally have people coming on the internet on some days. No, I believe the earth is flat. And then they don't watch Neil deGrasse Tyson even. They don't even watch Carl Sagan. They don't listen to any other thing. They don't even go onto the free NASA website where you can watch the Earth for free.
You know what's my favorite part of this whole discussion? Our ancestors
discovered,
codified.
They discovered that the Earth is round.
The Earth is round. Like, literally about, you know, literally thousands of years before we started debating about whether it's flat or not.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, from what I see, from the, you know, from our, you know, obviously our ancestors knew how important this information is. They decided to find the best way to preserve information.
Mm.
Literally in stones.
Yep.
Yeah. They put it in stones. The problem is, well, to this day, some of the languages are dead languages.
Yep.
We can't read a piece of it.
Now that's where I come in with the next bit of information.
Please do.
So earlier today, which once again, I don't want to give too much away, because ultimately there's a whole section that we can cover on there. There is a problem being faced specifically like in Namibia regarding the identity of mother tongues. Specifically indigenous languages.
Yeah.
The earlier discussion I came from, this is on a policy development level that these guys are looking at, this particular engagement. So when it factors into this particular discussion, we've just had a weird busy conducting here regarding the authenticity of things.
Mm-hmm.
At the heart of the discussion, some of the critical questions have to be asked in terms of, if you look at the influences of certain religions, how much did you know that Africans had their own religious systems before yeah. Christianity and Islam showed up. Now you've got people that are debating literally on levels of or having wars on literally whose faith is supposed to be the superior faith in terms of guiding.
And they're both adopted.
A social cohesion and adopting the best practice in terms of how a society should structure itself. There were literally faiths that were existing here where you literally... Where there was no aspect even of gender-based violence. There wasn't a need, Helmut. Do you know that there wasn't even a need? Do you know that when Jan van Riebeek landed at Cape Town, at Cape of Good Hope?
Yeah.
Now, what many people don't know is that the stories that are told specifically is that it was an empty place. But the Portuguese had documented so many times how they got supplies from the what was then known as the Khoi Khoi groups there.
Yeah.
They got so many supplies like fresh meat, milk sometimes, and some kinds of vegetables and, you know, and the fresh water supplies, because it is a pretty long journey sailing from Portugal around the west coast of Africa, around the southern tip of Africa,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got to get into the Indian Ocean. And then you hope you yeah, find
there was
some...
a lot of hoping going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of hope going on there. But you hope literally. Now, the discussion from this has been, you have a lot of stops to make to resupply.
Yeah.
Helmut, sometimes those guys were gone for 5 years.
Huh?
Yeah.
So Windhoek Beer asked Namibia to be real. And we got 500,000 responses from Racina and the other 1,400. Who are Crocs with socks. 10,000 peeps like T-Boss, whose nicknames are their real names. And 2,100 with the chops to master a braai like Arnold. It doesn't get more real than that. As Windhoek, the real beer for real people, we recognize the 100% real. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Okay, I won't supplement.
That's one heck of a trip. 5 years.
I won't supplement what we just spoke of.
Please don't.
Off air.
You know, there are only 15 days left to my salary.
So just for the listeners to know, things were pretty difficult for the early versions of maritime exploration.
Yeah.
So many people don't know that literally there was no economy, but the economy was based upon a simplified bartering system where people literally have had the means to survive. Obviously, what we see here today, like this radio thing, these buildings that were constructed here, this roof over our heads. Helmut, if you remember back to the discussion regarding improvised or innovative construction methods.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's going on.
That is, why is it that you can go all the way, is it to Gibeon or is it at Beersheba? In the Karas or in the Hartab region, one of the two villages, one of the two settlements. If you go there, there's another particular cultural site or heritage site of Namibia. It's, I think, Hendrik Witbooi's chapel, or it's the other, there was another particular, chieftain from the Nama tribes in the south who had a particular chapel at one of these particular, one of these two settlements.
Mm-hmm.
It was built from clay. It still stands till today. Now I ask you, Helmut, if that method exists, who showed up here with concrete and with cement, which is a pollutant?
You see, that right there is exactly why why every time that the discussions around heritage comes up,
yeah,
what I I begin to fear that as time progresses, yeah, we lose a lot of things, yeah, especially knowledge wise. And that's because, first of all, to this day, the pyramids of Egypt still baffles a lot of engineers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Graham Hedcock puts it that there is no engineer today with all of modern machines will put on their shoulders the heavy burden of building a structure of the size of the pyramid of Giza and then top it off with the precision of lining it, with the margin of error to the, to the true north,
mm,
that the pyramids of Giza are built with.
Mm.
With all the advanced technology. First of all, if you're going to cut through granite, you need modern equipment. The first thing is, what did they use to cut through granite with that level of precision?
To get the exact blocks.
The exact blocks. 4th century BC.
Yep.
So clearly we have lost a lot of knowledge.
That too.
Throw in the burning of the Library of Alexandria,
which was known as one of the world's ancient marvels or one of the world's ancient wonders.
Yep.
Because it included so much information.
So much information.
But as we always do know, guys, about the ancient world, there's always... We have a nice word in gaming. Helmut and I know that word. We can't use that word here on air. Well, like Helmut said, we still love our pay.
Thank you.
When you view what happened, I mean, Helmut, it's even like if you ever look into like damage that was caused to the Sphinx.
Yeah.
Right next to the pyramids of Giza.
Yeah.
You should see the stories about that. People were carving in cavities and stuff because they were either grave robbers,
mm-hmm,
or they were what's that thing of Indiana Jones,
treasure hunters.
They were treasure hunters. Someone told them something, and it was usually
most of it were based on legend, like the El Dorado.
Yeah, and then there's obviously also what has been known to be done by the two dominant religions currently in the world, in that specific neighborhood of the world.
Yeah.
The Christians, as well as also the Islamic, believers,
yeah,
and followers, they believed in defacing and damaging a lot of these monuments.
Why?
The most famous one is what happened under the Taliban in Afghanistan. One of the world's largest Buddhas, ancient Buddhas,
yeah,
was in a specific province of Afghanistan. And there was a guy who decided to go and become all whatever, and it was a UNESCO heritage site. If you ever look it up, the damaged UNESCO heritage site in Afghanistan, you will see it's a Buddha statue.
Yeah,
it was a Buddha statue carved into rock, into a mountain.
Yeah, but the temple of Hagia Sophia was a Christian, now Muslim, but is...
Are you talking about Hagia? Hagia Sophia?
Yeah, Hagia Sophia.
Hagia Sophia was a cathedral.
Yeah.
And then when the Ottomans took over after the Byzantines left...
They just christened it from Christianity to
Islam. And then they just converted it into a mosque, and now it became the Hagia Sophia.
Yeah.
But... Everyone knows, us Catholics, we all know the Hagia Sophia is literally...
It's coming from out of the Byzantine Empire.
They were Byzantine Catholics.
Yeah.
So we all know that it's a former cathedral.
If you look at Turkey, for example, it's one of those very interesting story of why we lose some of the knowledge of, the knowledge that our ancestors had. Because every time a superpower comes up, yeah, they try to erase the identity of the previous superpower to the point where they just get rid of, it's either they get rid of something or take credit for it by renaming it to their own deities.
Yeah.
And the Romans are a perfect example of that. There is no, there is no Jupiter. Jupiter is the Greek equivalent, is the Roman equivalent of Zeus.
Mm.
That's Greek mythology basically rebaptized. Now, when you look at it from that, you can't help but ask yourself one question. Where did the Greeks get it from? And chances are very high they got it from the Medes and Persians. And if the Medes and Persians also, who did they get it from? Chances are very high if you go back in that line, you are going to end up with ancient Sumerians.
Yeah.
You are going to find yourself in route to ancient Babylonians, ancient Sumerians. And
the Phoenicians are there.
If Phoenicians are there, then,
that
you know,
neighborhood is, sometimes I don't know where that neighborhood falls, because I know the Mesopotamians is in modern day Iraq.
Yeah.
The Mesopotamians were literally, and they say it, there was a civilization between the Euphrates and the Tigris in Iraq.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the Phoenicians, the Sumerians, and the Babylonians, what was the other one's name? There was another civilization that was also there. All that neighborhood of guys.
Yeah.
And they were all preceding ancient Greece and ancient Rome.
Yeah, like they are way older than that.
Yeah.
So, now, the thing is, when you look at it again, and when you go to South America, you see the same problem. The Spanish shows up and they destroy a lot of things that were left behind by the Aztec, the Inca, and the Mayans. They just, these guys are just literally melting gold so they can take to their empire, because, the Incas and the Mayans, they just made statues of their gods out of it.
Yeah.
And the Spanish were like, hallelujah.
But here's something, Helmut, in our discussion of authenticity that comes in. And the biggest concern of authenticity comes through what happened in 2012. If anyone remembers the mayhem of 2012.
What's that?
Where there were people saying that the world will end in 2012.
Keanu Reeves
had a movie about it.
Yeah, trying to survive high school.
Do you know, you were still trying to survive high school. At that time I had resigned from one of my career, the other corporates I worked at, and I was, just trying to sort out some particular sort of like studies, things that were loose hanging from my marketing qualification.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Cape Town, finished the graphic design stuff and came back and all that. But in that period of 2010 to 2011, a story happened or occurred, and you know about the story about the tablet, the Mayan or the Incan tablet that was discovered.
The Mayan calendar?
The calendar, yeah. But it was a massive tablet. It was a massive thing, but it's technically a calendar.
Yeah.
Where they realized when they studied this particular calendar, they discovered that there's a black hole in the middle of our system, our solar system, that modern day science could not even pick up. Then they discovered also that the calendar ended literally in December 2012. And then all kinds of theories went crazy. Now, one of the particular things that happened here in the real life context in Namibia was that there were most people saying the world is going to end and certain weird things started happening. It's usually from these happy clappy churches. They know who they are. I'm not afraid. Don't worry. I'm a Catholic.
Happy clappy.
We own the Bible. So, you can start your stuff. So what happened there was, and when I came back, I started talking to those old colleagues of mine from that company. I asked them, so what happened in 2012? And they were like, "Ooh, Dwight, you should have seen all manner of preacher, prophet, pastor was saying the fall, the end of times is coming. They need to book their people in. They need to now prepare.
Book them in what?
In hotels and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, Helmut, you should go read up on what happened in the US even. These guys were running up bills in hotels, making promises, telling the hotel management staff, yeah, guys, it's the end of times, don't worry.
And the hotel staff believed that?
And the hotel staff said, okay, we'll be patient with you. And when 31 December 2012 hit, when it changed from old New Year and everyone has Happy New Year-ing in 1 January 2013, then everybody was like, okay, so where's our money? Start paying. Because you said most of it. But technically, the calendar was ended on 12 December 2012.
Yeah.
That specific calendar. Mm-hmm. It ended on 12 December 2012. Now, that's also where an authentic trait or a piece of authenticity from a long-lost civilization perpetuated through into modern-day society.
Okay, was that calendar Mayan or...
I can't remember if it's Mayan or Aztec or Incan.
Because
one of the three did not exist in the same time frame or in the same spot as one of the two others.
I think the Mayans were the oldest, followed by the Incans, and then you have the Aztecs. Because, Moctezuma and Cortez, this is when the Spanish, storms in and start causing all kinds of chaos. Yeah, the conquistadors.
Now, the downside of this particular discussion has been, Helmut. Now, obviously, someone, Stump, could read Spanish somewhere.
And then translate.
Or could translate this Mayan calendar. And it's, because remember, they were doing the same things that the Egyptians were doing. They were writing on stone. Because they knew stone
is not going anywhere.
It's not going to go anywhere. Someone will find it. And you obviously need a particular, like a dictionary. You need, they call it something because the South American civilizations were also using pictograms. Pictograms are literally, it's a picture.
Yeah.
And you need to decipher what the sentence says by reading all the pictures in the sentence. So if you've got woman, car, a glass of wine, and nighttime, and a moon symbol right there, it obviously, you could interpret it as, having a nice time. At night.
Thank God most of our modern communications are electronic, because I cannot imagine, 1,000 years from now, people running into emojis.
Deciphering each other's particular meanings, and it's just pictures that you're using to read.
Someone coming across modern day emojis, they will just look at an eggplant and like, this is the fruits they were eating, they were trying to burn. No, they are not!
Why must you go for eggplant? But anyway.
Now, if you understand that, you, no heaven. Hell, straight up. But look, I'm just picturing, the future generation. Take, for example, 4,000 years from now.
Yeah.
And,
The fear is that we would be sitting. Have you ever watched the movie Idiocracy?
We would be sitting at what?
Oh, no, I roasted a Gen Z today. Told her, you guys are so intellectually challenged. That you guys changed a platform that was meant for honest purposes into one of the most foulest particular platforms on this planet. You know, I sent you that video earlier today.
Yeah.
And she said, yeah. She even went like, it's you guys, the millennials that are even supporting that. I said, yeah, because they've got the money. You guys are too poor.
And then I told her,
how is that possible? And she said, yeah, it's the innovative discussion. But if you look at what the world is becoming, because of specifically, and this is once again, exposure to certain particular media elements, exposure to certain information elements, exposure to certain particular information sets and the likes, Hamut. Do you know that they discovered, 100, 200 years from now, humanity will lose one of the most important skills in the world?
What's that?
Handwriting.
The ability to write. Cursive, for example.
No, handwriting. To write.
Just writing with a pen.
With a pen and a pencil.
Yeah.
Handwriting. It's one of the reasons why I told you last year, here on the home.
Yeah, there's too much electronics taking over.
Why the Danish were printing more textbooks to teach the children to read. Because the children were good in the primary schools in Denmark of taking out a tablet and they just scroll the whole time. But they wanted, the teachers realized there was no interaction between the teacher and the child.
Everything is going electronic.
Everything is, because the child is more concentrated on this electronic interface.
Ah, yeah, and then rather engaging.
Than rather looking up and looking at the teacher. And the teachers were like, no, we have to tell Ministry of Education there's an issue here.
Yeah.
And they realized there was an issue with attention span by the children.
Social.
The children were becoming socially awkward with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, awkward is a bit of a weird word to apply, but it's literally like in colloquial terms, there was an awkwardness that children were having because they didn't know how to talk to each other, but they knew how to interact with a device.
Yeah.
Then the latest thing that I read.
No wonder we're becoming each other's, you know, status viewers, men. These.
Then I read this article at the start of this year in terms of one of the most crucial and important skills that humanity has ever developed in its existence is starting to fade away because people are interested in just moving with their fingers. Now, Helmut, how did you go from having pictograms, building a language on using emojis, like you said,
mm-hmm.
but let's say now this is now antique emojis.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only like 100 people out of 100,000 that could read this emoji. They were usually the nobility,
yeah.
The royalty, and the religious class.
Yeah, those ones that could afford education, and it was just, you know.
Or it was literally like
5 cents to go to the university. Very expensive.
Like in India, it was based upon a class system.
Certain levels
of society were only allowed to be educated.
So, I mean, that's like being in the end colony that you know, if you are born a soldier, you're just a soldier.
Yeah.
Then you have a bunch of guys that are just dedicated to mating, like idiots.
But and they die immediately after they've done that act.
You know,
Or do you want to be the praying man?
No, that's where I was going.
You become immediate lunch for your wife.
You know, that whole thing of going for kapana after, if you are primate, you are the kapana.
Now, that's not even kapana, bro. You are the dinner.
Thank God I'm not primate.
So yeah. So when you look at that scenario, before we take the next particular act break, the discussion has been here. We developed handwriting
mm-hmm.
with letters. We advanced language.
Yeah.
Helmut, from pictograms, emojis, antique emojis, to now being able to technically losing the thing, basically because of a bunch of Tim Cooks and Mark Zuckerbergs. Who decided, you know, to improve things, you need to be just punching numbers.
So we have innovated ourselves into laziness.
Basically. That's the most reason why I asked you, have you ever heard of Idiocracy? If you've never seen Idiocracy, the movie featuring Luke Wilson, not Owen Wilson, Luke Wilson, the older brother, the guy with he's got the brown hair, not the blonde.
Look, man, one of the question I always, ask myself is, if an asteroid fell and wiped out the entire life on the planet,
yeah.
And then some type of human civilization came from other planets and landed on planet Earth, what would they find here? No, because of the electronization of things.
Yeah.
What would they find here that will show them that our civilization existed?
Well, specifically abandoned cities.
Concrete structures? After 3,000 years, you're not going to find that.
Those that were built out of concrete and stone.
Those that were built out of concrete.
So that means that the pyramids would still technically
survive.
Yeah,
the pyramids are most likely to survive. But
the
most of the
white woman of Tweefelfontein will still be there.
No, she will still be there.
Yeah.
You see, this is where rocks now comes in handy. I'm telling you.
Are you making a case for us to go back to chiseling our homework into stone?
That's not, how the heck are you going to submit that?
This is not Fred Flintstone and the Flintstones.
Well, quick question. How the heck are you going to submit that? Professor, I'm done.
How many stone slabs do you think you would need?
Then bro shows up, you know, the way that you see your teacher showing up with a red pen.
Yeah.
You know, you can't show up with a red pen to a rock. You have to show up with an angle grinder. You know, like,
to make the cross.
Yeah, to make the cross. And you are wrong here. Okay, but let's come back to this discussion.
Oh my goodness.
And an angle grinder would be awesome.
Yeah. It's more like a jackhammer, not an angle grinder. You use, but the jackhammer will destroy the homework.
Forget the homework. A jackhammer will destroy that kid's book.
Which will be the homework.
Yeah. Man.
But yeah.
Tell your parents to buy for you a new, you know. Okay.
Paper book.
Yeah. Yeah. The preservation part is a very interesting one because for a very, all throughout history, we have, every civilization have tried to the best of their ability to preserve knowledge for the next generation,
yeah.
Which is why we have all the folklore, all the traditional songs or what we call, traditional way of doing things, be it food, be it music, be it, law, be it, spiritual aspect of things. Everything has its, can be traced has a history behind it.
Yeah.
But the question now of asking ourselves as Africans, who are we? That question doesn't have an easy answer. For one, we have a lot of foreign influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. The very same way that you can see, you see that English itself, if you are to trace it back 400 or 500 years back, you are not going to understand a word coming out of the English language, not even the English themselves.
Mm.
It becomes, it begins, the further back you go, the more it sounds more like German. And then, it's obviously, you are most likely going to find yourself into Latin.
A little bit of French as well.
You have beef, pork, mutton and stuff. All that is French.
Color, honor, favorite, continuous, anything that has an OU.
And you have the most famous ones, the ones that still have retained their French origin, like fiancé.
That too. Breakfast is also a French word. Was it lunch? The word lunch as well. But yeah, but before we continue, let's quickly take another live read. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Online qualifications for postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake applications are now open. Velvice University is inviting applications into the below-mentioned online postgraduate programs for the June 2025 intake. For more information and applications, you can visit our website at www.wuu.edu.na. Postgraduate Diploma in Project Management Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field. This is a one-year blended course. Master of Project Management. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Monitoring and Evaluation Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a one-year blended course. Master of Monitoring and Evaluation. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 8 qualification in a related field, and this is a 2 years blended course. Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration Level 8. To enroll in this program, a candidate should have an NQF Level 7 qualification in a related field, and this is a 1 year blended course. All programs are fully accredited by the NQA.
Welcome back. We have 6 minutes. So there is Africa. If we are going to preserve Africa's heritage, my God, that's one monumental task. Seeing that we are we are the most diverse, language wise.
Yeah.
Spiritual wise, culinary wise. There are types of culinary delicacies that are considered, there are type of things that are considered a delicacy in some parts of African countries where, that you and I will look at it and go, yikes.
My mind literally flew to one of those examples.
One friend of mine went to one restaurant coming out of, East Africa.
Yeah.
And, she had soup that, I think, her digestive system was not, was not responding too well because some of these things requires adjusting. Believe me. She found herself having some serious tummy aches, and she called them and tried to find out, what are some of the ingredients like that they used there.
Yeah.
They mentioned that some of their ingredients was snail. Now, that's not something that, you know, that's not, okay, I know we don't eat that in our culture. But, the thing is, there's something that's eaten in my culture that will make them look at me and go like, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah.
So, that's, that actually explains
a lot.
One of those, debates that, or more like a social media, you know, war that we had here over, you know, that sign that was put up somewhere. Very far from the right regions that said, you know, friend, not food. But the thing is...
No, but Hamu, there is a thing. No. We have to entertain that particular discussion.
Yeah.
Look, there is something specifically known in dietary... What do you call it? Dietary advice. Now, I've tried looking for something like this. Does Namibia have something like this? Dietary advice comes through from a national dietary agency that is part of the government. For example, you have the Health Professionals Council of Namibia. Whereby, doesn't matter where you studied health, you need to be enrolled and be part of their membership. Because that is a national representative body. So whether you work in the private sector of the healthcare or public, you are registered there. So too also in the realms of human anatomy and what humans need for sustenance and to survive, you also need a national dietary guideline. South Africa has something like that. I've never heard, I've not found one. Do you know that in the United States, there is an agency that lays out a national dietary guideline? I watched this on a specific video where a guy was asking a question in terms of why did in the 1970s were people healthier? Skinnier. And then they realized that people had access to a lot more veggies and fresh meat supply. Meaning, you know, what the farms were producing, you could buy on your supermarkets. And there was not, and one of the largest fears was like with the Trump's administration, in the tariff discussion, is no one wants to buy American red meat products. Specifically American beef. Why? Even though the American meat production sector does have guidelines in terms of trying to trace from the farm to the plate mechanism. That's just what Namibia also has through Meatco.
Trying to make sure that, you know.
You can literally trace and you can trace the piece of meat to the farmer to see, okay, what are the inputs of the farmer? And you try to understand how does what the farmer is doing to the animal there in terms of animal husbandry impacts the consumer, even if the consumer is in Norway or in China. So. The concern about the American market, meat production market, is literally that a lot of Mexican meat gets imported to the United States. And there is no similar particular control mechanisms or monitoring mechanisms about what Mexican farmers do to their animals or what they actually use in animal husbandry. Now, the greater concerns out there in the world is that all the countries from the EU to Asia, even to Africa, no one wants to import American red meat, specifically beef, because there is the usage of steroids, hormonal treatment in the animals. Now, these particular things have knock-on effects in terms of the human health, because if people don't know how a food system works or food cycle works, if there's a chemical that you inject in a producer element here, that chemical gets transferred. Let me say that again, Helmut. If there's a chemical introduced
so
here,
it becomes more concentrated at the end of the food chain.
Or it accumulates somewhere.
Yeah.
There's an accumulation factor you also have to factor in.
Yeah.
That's most why when they look at the forever chemicals discussion in the world, they realize forever chemicals like the microplastics as well are a big issue.
Yeah.
Microplastics are found in all the waterway systems of Europe and of North America. Waterway systems, rivers. I know. I just dropped a lot of bombs there.
But yeah, forever chemicals. I ruined my friends. But commercial break.
Tune in to the F&B segment every Monday morning from 7:45 a.m. live on Eagle FM for early morning dose of financial education and account protection. The F&B segment is proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
6 o'clock on the dot. Forever chemicals.
Yeah.
Plastic, microplastics, go.
And all that. So even in discussion of authenticity, Amud, try to look at the concept of manufacturing and industrialization as well. I mean, the other day I also once again saw a particular, specifically our discussion of yesterday. Which was the digital trade discussion as well.
Yeah.
And the one obviously before that was the other particular African discussion as well. In all of that scenarios, Africa, part of Africa's planning is that we need to harness agricultural production, but it's like in the communal farming scenario.
Not on commercial level.
But our analysis that you and I did here on air is that this comes directly into conflict with the overall industrial ambitions.
Goal that we want to achieve.
Not just of Africa. Not just of Namibia, but the whole of Africa. So you want to make smartphones, you want to have EVs produced in Africa with African names, with African entrepreneurs, with African billionaires. You want to see African prosperity. But the thing is, you want to keep the people that should be part of your labor force, you want to keep them there in the agricultural sector and in the rural areas. And the rural areas have the least development taking place in most cases. Because most of the development is associated to where you've got the highest amount of economic activity in your urban settlements. Man, I sounded clever right there. Yesterday. I need to become a lecturer. Yesterday.
Yeah, no, I can't try that. You know, my...
it'll just be an ego-rubbing endeavor, you know, just rubbing my ego the whole time in front of the class.
At least I've tried it.
And then most of the students would go like, "Oh wow, sir, you're so clever." Yeah, don't worry, guys. I'm just acting a little bit.
Yeah. So who are we as Africans? Now, this, you know, this is an aspect of looking at our cultures, cultural practices, mostly, and asking ourselves are we losing, or have we just flat out lost some parts, if not in whole, our cultural norms? Now, here is something now that's very important. I think I should have pointed out earlier.
Mm.
We are obviously going to have to do some modifications here and there. Now, at some point, I think sometimes last year, there was a proposal that was made, I think that was in Parliament, about the legitimization of polygamy in civil marriages.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe that thing stood up.
Now, here's the thing. The question I asked was, why are a lot of people, especially women, gravitating towards getting married under civil law? Rather than our traditional ways of getting married, is because of how our cultures are structured towards inheritance.
But it's also a means in terms of Helmut, how the community acts around us. Because here's one of the weirdest observations that if anyone has ever observed, traditions versus let's call it modernized ways of living.
Yeah,
is that we are all Christian, but then we wish to subscribe to the one thing that Christianity is against, an indigenous lifestyle that does not have Christianity in it.
Mm-hmm.
So then we try to infuse Christianity into that lifestyle. And when it comes to a traditional court instance, for example,
mm-hmm.
now you're married under, what's that traditional law?
You're married under customary law.
Yeah. I didn't want to use customary
on
purpose, but you're married in those particular conditions. More than 5 years, you and I know it's identified under Namibia's legal system in marriages as cohabitation, right? Because you've been together.
Mm-hmm.
But now, under the specific thing when it comes to inheritance, property, assets, what happens then? Whereas if you were married in front of the magistrate.
It's not that detailed, in the same way that you see civil marriage, marriage laws regulating civil marriages.
Exactly.
Like civil marriages outline everything. What happens, how to get married, what happens in terms of ownership.
Yeah.
How to get married, you have to show up to the judge and explain to them you want to get married in community, out of community, with or without an accrual. Everything is laid out. Or in the when you are raising your children, and also, you know, by the way, everything from names, and in the event of a divorce, what happens? who it gets makes what life property.
Predictable. Yeah.
Everything is very predictable. It's a system that's you know that can enable one to look at and say, you know and make their decisions before the whatever babysitter comes in between them. But the point is, it's mostly either the babysitter or the pool boy. But
in Namibia, pool boys.
Which pool boys? Now the thing is, most of our customs
yeah.
have somewhat sort of like the same level of predictability built in them. The thing is, they are very, most if not all that I have that I know of are very patriarchal in nature. In the event of a divorce, everything is most likely going to go to either the uncles, the niece.
Mm.
Or the husbands only. Now, at this point, no woman in their right mind will tell you, I want to get married using a system that will disadvantage me if anything happened to our
and
marriage.
The children.
Yeah, and the children.
If any children are born in that union.
Yeah.
And if in the moment that man, that husband dies, I mean, if you guys just... People can just play around with imagination, looking at the poisonings that happen in the Kavango regions.
Yeah, people will just show up and start saying, well, according to our culture, you know, because my uncle died, I'm here to take everything. You idiot, he had kids.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do with them? How am I supposed to feed them? But, the way that is just structured is the reason why a lot of people, especially when it comes to marriage, I look at that and I totally understand. Because even if I was a woman, there is no in a heck would I ever get married using my tradition. Because I know that if anything happened to my husband, God forbid, I'm going to be left broke.
And destitute.
And yeah.
Homeless. And many people think that tradition... Tradition doesn't exist in an economy. The thing is, imagine that scenario happens, Helmut. Now that woman has to have access to money. Let's, for example, say she was married to one of those men that said, no, you must not marry. Yeah, you must not work. You must just be a housewife. Now he passes away. What income does she... Now she has to go back to work.
Exactly.
Now she gets disowned by her in-laws because they are arguing the discussions of he was our brother, he was our son, we want these things back. Those particular protections are necessary.
Yeah.
In a modern day Namibia.
Believe me, they are.
That need money. We are struggling with malnutrition in this country. And there are people that literally, just on the act of a whim,
they wish to impose
destitution. On a family member. That's the worst even. It's a family member.
This is an awesome discussion. When it comes to the cultural way of doing things, this is...
Oh, we will have a long way to go as Africa.
A really long one.
To really dissect this authenticity component.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's laced even with a little bit of Christianity, or Islam even, it'll make things even more difficult.
Very complicated. So, 8 minutes past the hour of 6. Here's where we park the bus for me. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. You all have a good evening. And please do stay tuned in for the next program. That's a business and economic segment.
My side, dear listeners, let's see each other again, same time, same place. Obviously, tomorrow is a Friday. Don't get lost. Helmut and I, we will still be here. Don't worry.
Yeah.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.